You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 26. Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm, and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. On today's show, I'm talking to Katie McCann, a family lawyer and barrister, because as we've been navigating through this pandemic, it's been affecting so many of our core relationships. And I've been reading, actually, Katie, that the charity Citizens Advice has been reporting spikes in searches for online advice on ending relationships, and lots of law firms have been reporting over 100% increases in inquiries over the last 6 to 10 months. Plus, there's been a similar pattern globally, actually, around the world. So Katie is founder of family law firm Lowry Legal, and she specializes in helping separating couples on their journey from separation to the next phase of their lives. And she believes in treating her clients as whole people and understands that their divorce is only one phase in their lives. And helping clients emerge on the other side as strong people is Katie's mission. And she's turning the perception of the legal profession on its head, because she believes that the legal profession can be a bit stuffy and lawyers are a bit unapproachable. And that, I can assure you, is certainly not the case with Katie. So on this episode of Mojo Matters, we're going to be exploring family matters, particularly in light of the pandemic and how that's been impacting people, families, and getting some practical guidance from Katie on what to do if you're in these challenging and emotional family situations right now. And also, Katie's a massive inspiration to me in other ways, because she has a really rare condition which affects her muscles and joints and ligaments. And she promised herself long ago that she wouldn't let this beat her. And she sought to build up her strength as much as she could with resistance training. And this has turned into a love of bodybuilding. And she's currently on course to competing in her first bikini show in 2022. So I can't wait to hear more about that as well, Katie. So Katie, welcome to Mojo Matters.
Hi.
It's so amazing to have you on the show. So look, let's get going with this. Pandemic feels like it's been the perfect storm for couples and families, with lockdown and social distancing causing all of us to spend this increased amount of time together. And it's probably been, for many of us, like living in a pressure cooker. Have you seen the pandemic as this kind of catalyst for breakups? And what kind of impacts have you been seeing that the pandemic's been having on families?
So you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, because it's a reflection on, I suppose, society and where we are at the moment, there has been a massive increase in the number of people looking to divorce or separate if they've been cohabiting. And it has to be, doesn't it? The logical conclusion to that has to be because we've all been locked up together for such a long period of time. And those niggly things, those things about relationships that people might have been able to forget because they were out of the house for 8-10 hours a day, they only come home and have dinner together. That all went, didn't it? Just went out the window, and everybody was in together, could only go out for an hour a day. So I think that, I like the term pressure cooker. I think that's exactly what's gone on. So we saw in the summer a of last year, when we all thought we were coming out of it a little bit, we saw kind of an increase then. So that was interesting. But then when we went back down into things started to get a little bit difficult again, around kind of like November, December, things started to slow down again, I think, in the family law world. And now it's really, really emerging again. And I think the pattern that I've seen, certainly in my practice, is people got a bit nervous when we went into lockdown type situations, because it's all the uncertainty from an economic perspective. If I split up now, what's going to happen? Where am I going to live? What's the financial situation going to be like? And I think when people start to feel some confidence that we're actually emerging out into the new normal, whatever that's going to be, that's then when people are thinking, I can't do this anymore. You know, there is now a clear path out for me, and then they're seeking advice.
And also, I've been reading that there's been, I don't know if you've experienced this or you've seen this, but I've been reading that there's been like a spike in women initiating separations and divorces. Maybe they were thinking, you know, sort of like in lockdown, okay, we're all together. Maybe you're going to help me a bit more with, you know, the childcare, the, you know, the house stuff. And that's maybe not been the case. And like you say, it's been like things are under the magnifying glass, aren't they, when you kind of all cooped up together and locked down together. Have you seen an increase in women initiating separation or divorce in your practice?
I wouldn't say specifically an increase in women, because there tends to be, it's quite an equal spread, if I'm honest, across the board. But I think the pandemic, it's just been an opportunity, hasn't it, for people to stop, pause, and just kind of take that breath and reevaluate their relationship. So, you know, it could very well be a woman who's been, you know, running around like a headless chicken. She's got a full-time job. She's got two children. She's got a husband. But then in the working from home scenario, where she's still working full time, but she's still looking after the children and she's homeschooling them,
yeah,
you know, and looking after the home as well, those sorts of things, again, it's this pressure cooker, you know, under the microscope analysis, it's making people stop and think, is this what I want? Is this what I want my relationship to actually look like? And I think that that microscope has just kind of, it's enhanced, it's enlarged flaws and faults in people's relationships, coupled with the time for them to sit and think about it and analyze it and think, I don't want to do this anymore. So it's, you know, it's very sad, but it's very positive for some people as well, because it's been kind of, you know, it's like a revelation to some people. I would never have seen this if I hadn't have been locked up with this person for the last six months. You know, those sorts of things. So I would say, me personally, I haven't seen an increase in women. It's just an increase generally
across the board. Okay, so what typically are the sorts of things that you deal with? What are maybe some of the most like common causes of breakups, the friction, and how do you help people through the process? Because this can become a very, very highly charged emotional situation and time, can't it? And what is the kind of, if you've got guidance and like kind of advice to give people to help them get actually through it the other side in a way that they can move on with their lives in a healthy and productive way, what would you be advising them to do?
So what are the most, so that was two parts, that question.
Sorry, it was a really long, like multiple questions. Yeah. So really bad at asking you questions there. So what are some of the sorts of things that you deal with that are the like the common like causes of breakups? Could they be have been avoided, do you think? You know, what are the things that you're dealing with generally?
The main things tend to fall into two camps. Either there's somebody else, and there's been adultery. Now, there's lots of things lead up to that particular point, lots of, you know, inequalities in the relationship, lots of issues between the married couple generally before you get to the point of adultery. But that tends to be one of the major reasons.
And even though we've been locked down, is that still something that you're seeing at the moment through the pandemic, right?
So even though the COVID stay at home red is the same, you shouldn't be going to somebody's house that you don't live with. I think when you actually peel it back, some people have been carrying
still
on.
Still doing that.
with those things in their lives. So adultery being one of the main reasons. And the other main reason, which, you know, opens up a bit of a Pandora's box, is unreasonable behaviour. So the question is, what is unreasonable behaviour?
Yeah.
So it can range from, you know, I had one years and years ago now where, you know, it ranged from as simple as leaving the toilet seat up. And that went into a divorce petition.
Really? I mean, it's always up in my house, the toilet seat.
Mine too. So it can range from as simple as that, because let's not forget now, it's all subjective. You know, it's what does this person find to be reasonable? It could just be, you know, a straw that's kind of broken the camel's back. So it can go from that right the way up to things like coercion and control. And kind of, you know, sexual misdemeanors and things like that. So the range of things that fall under the unreasonable behaviour category can be very, very vast and wide. And I would say that there's no like particular pattern. Each couple, whilst it might fall into this camp or that camp, has their own individual and particular journey that they go on. And that the reasoning and the facts are different and unique and particular to them when they come. But in a very broad sense, those are kind of like the main things that lead to relationship breakdown.
And then I guess, you know, gosh, these things, if it's anything from like leaving the loo seat up to, you know, much very, very significant things, although what is like you're saying, reasonable behavior to one person is not to another. And I guess when there are kids involved as well, this process can get so highly emotionally charged that is it really difficult for many people to get through the process legally, because, you know, with, I know you're championing like changing the perception like of the legal field, because depending on, you know, who's acting for you and all of that, that process itself can make things, you know, even more challenging and difficult. So, you know, what advice have you got for people that are going through this process? How can they navigate it in a productive way, where you've kind of got your life back, I guess, when you're out the other side? Is that a fair way of summarising it? You get your new life, really.
Absolutely. It is a process, and I use this word all the time, and it sounds a bit cliched sometimes, but it is a journey.
Yeah.
It's not something that happens overnight, because before somebody comes to see a lawyer, they might have been going through issues for years. Things that have eroded their self-esteem. You know, there could have been violence, there could have been sexual issues, all kinds of things that could have been going on for years and years and years and years before they get to the point where they then actually seek legal advice on it. The process then can take some time. And then there's the process of healing after that as well. So it's a massive life event, basically. If you're going to be going through any sort of separation, exactly right, if there's children involved, it is more emotionally charged. So what I would say to people who are thinking about doing, you know, entering into a separation and thinking, I feel overwhelmed by it, what should I do? The first thing that you should do is go and see a lawyer. Right? Now, you might want to test drive a few before you decide who it is that you actually, who do you connect with, who do you resonate with, and who do you think you're going to be able to work with over, you know, a decent period of time. It could be, you know, up to a year, it could be a bit longer. Can I connect with this person? Do I like them? Do I like their ethos? Do I like the way they operate? So you might want to test drive a few. But right at that initial stage, all you need is you need some very clear and decisive advice about your particular situation. Where do you stand? Where do you stand financially? How does the law look at this? What's it going to look like here at the other side once I've been through this process? And you need to start with somebody that can give you that kind of bigger picture ideal right at the beginning, so you know this is what I've got to get through. And at the end, it might, because there's no guarantees, but at the end it might look something like this. This is what I'm working towards. The other thing that you should do, in my view, is you should get a financial advisor on board as early as you possibly can in the separation. I work with financial advisors. I like to bring them on board in the process because I'm a lawyer. I'm not, you know, I don't do the numbers in the sense of, like, you know, I don't do pensions, I don't do the ISAs, the investments, etc., etc. And you're better to have somebody come on board who can then work through the process to say, okay, well, if we do this and we're going to have this much maintenance per month, what does that look like for you on a monthly basis? What does that look like for you in terms of what your pension's going to look like in 5 years, in 10 years, etc.? And you can get kind of a better, more holistic view. I also recommend sometimes that a therapist is really, really useful because you go through so much that isn't legal that you shouldn't be spending lawyer fees on speaking to your lawyer about. It's, you should be speaking to somebody that's got that expertise to help and to help you through the emotional side of it. Meet with a client and then we start to think about that whole journey and we start to think about what team am I going to build around this person? So it's not just me, it's other people, other professionals, where we can work together to make that as smooth as possible. And so that the client isn't kind of, you know, just like turning around in the dark and doesn't know where they're going and doesn't know what the next action's going to be or how long this is going to take and all those sorts of things. It's to just offer that support. So I've heard so many stories of people saying, I ain't got a clue what the lawyer was saying to me. The lawyer was charging this. This was happening. I had no control over what was going on. That's absolutely not what we do. It's all about the client. It's about that journey. And it's about reducing those feelings of being overwhelmed by everything.
Yeah. Because financially, people are probably pretty, you know, you've got all the emotions that are going on anyway, the relationship type emotions. The financial aspect that could feel really overwhelming and quite scary. Kids, you know, how are we dealing with the kids and supporting the kids emotionally as part of that. So I think, you know, really interesting in what you said also about building the team around the client. Including thinking about if you need therapy, maybe even a life coach to help you
100%.
Yeah, yes. Get through the next stage. Yeah, so there's actually so much more than I say just the legal process, isn't there? You know, that bit actually is a process, isn't it? So does it help your clients to, you know, and it's really hard to detach yourself from this because you're right in the middle of it, aren't you? But and it's, you know, it's affecting you and your life, but to think of it as a process and to get the right support around you to help you navigate the emotional side of this and to deal with this healthily and productively. The divorce, separation, whatever it is that you're going through is literally the legal process.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. That's a really healthy way to kind of compartmentalize it in your mind. It is a process. You will get from A to B.
Yeah.
You will get there. It's getting from A to B in the healthiest, most productive way possible. And like you said at the top of this conversation, coming out of this on the other side, having learned some lessons about yourself, your family, your other half, and moving into that next phase of your life, kind of a stronger, wiser person.
Yeah. So thinking about there's a legal process, there's a financial process, and there's an emotional process as part of this. And surround yourself with the people that can help you get through that, the people that are skilled to help you do that. Amazing. I really like that. Those were real nuggets of gold, Katie. Thank you so much. And just really practical as well. If you don't mind me saying, you don't seem at all scary. As a lawyer, I sometimes think, look
Oh, thank you.
at you don't seem at all scary. Because that can be quite scary, actually. If you don't, you know, maybe this is the first time you've had to go and get a lawyer. You don't know what to expect. You've got all these perceptions around you about what a lawyer, solicitor, barrister, whatever looks like, how they are. Because you see this stuff on the TV, right? A lot of the time you see that, and
Do.
is there truth in these things? You know, when we see these lawyers on TV programs, is that how they are?
Well, I'd like to say it's that glamorous, but some of the things you see on TV are right, but might be kind of like embellished a little bit. And some things are just complete rubbish.
Fictional.
But I think
Entertainment.
but completely for entertainment purposes, but I think there is a perception that, you know, oh my God, I've got to go and see a lawyer. Are they going to be sat there in the black suit with the, you know, twin set of pearls, glasses on the end of the nose, and, you know, charging me lots and lots of money? It's part of my reasoning for setting up Lowry Legal was to kind of break that perception down in that, yes, I'm a lawyer. Yes, I do all the lawyer stuff. I do it to the best of my ability, but I like to think that I am approachable and relatable. And somebody that's going through this life-changing process can feel like they can talk to me. Yeah. And they can engage in the process in a little bit more of a holistic way. And that's kind of the reason why I set up Lowry Legal.
And because, I mean, this is amazing as well. I think breaking down those perceptions, because it can be scary thinking I've got to, you know, it's the first time my perception of like lawyers is what I've watched on TV and you hear, you know, it's going to be so expensive. And but I know your model's different as well, isn't it? So you've got a different model around this. So I guess that provides people with some security around what they're going to, the kind of bills that they're going to expect, as opposed to a clock that's ticking and then suddenly you get a bill and you're not expecting it. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. So we are the way that we are looking at fees and the way that we're looking at funding is to try and provide certainty for people. So, you know, whether you are a multi-multi-millionaire or you are, you know, somebody that works in a school, this is a distress purchase. Yeah, it's not a transaction like you're buying a company or you're buying a house or it's a piece of commercial litigation for a business. This is a situation that you didn't actually want to be in. You've got to deal with it. You need a lawyer, but it's what I call a distress purchase. So why wouldn't you want to know what that's going to cost you? And part of the reticence to go to a lawyer is the perception that you might be losing control over your budget, and then it might be costing so much money that you basically can't afford it and you don't have any control over that at all. So part of what we do is we provide price certainty for our clients. And we chunk it down, we chunk it into sections, but we will discuss with a client what it is they're going to spend on that particular section of the work. And that's it. And that's what we do. And we
have no surprises then. So, and I guess, you know, that's great for taking some of the worry out of that, out of the process as well, isn't it? Because there's huge probably financial burden that you're thinking about. And also, like, you know, money's going to be tight, and then I've got to give like most of it away to the lawyer, and I don't know how much, you know. And it's only the, and this is what comes up a lot, isn't it? It's just the lawyers that win, like it's this game, win lose game kind of thing.
So it's about, yeah, it's about proportionality. It's about letting people budget sensibly for their legal fees. So if they know it's going to cost this for this portion of work, then they can budget for that. They're not then going to get, you know, a surprise bill from me because we had five conversations here and you didn't know that they were on the clock, and then you get an additional bill for that. Mm-hmm. I think that makes the process of divorce and separation harder.
Yeah,
when that happens.
Yeah.
So again, part of this new business model that we're putting together is to provide that certainty and that budget and stability for clients that come into the business as well.
Great. So thank you so much for walking us through all of that and providing, I think, so much useful insight to navigate a massively life-changing experience, really, isn't it? So that's amazing. But also, I just want to talk about Katie. And also the whole kind of, you know, you are genuinely breaking these perceptions of what a lawyer looks like. I know this is audio, it's podcast, but there'll be some like visual things as well that go along with this. Because tell us about, I mean, when we were chatting, so we've met fairly recently, I find you really inspiring. You've got tons of energy and like creativity, and but you were telling me about this rare condition that you have that affects your muscles, and that it took you like years before it was diagnosed, and as a consequence you've suffered an awful lot of pain, haven't you, throughout your life. But you're always so optimistic, driven, like ambitious, and quite frankly, really fun to like be around. So can you tell us a bit more about your story around that? And how do you keep your mojo cup brimming when, you know, you've got a rare condition that's really painful?
So how long have you got, Jo? We'll be here all day talking about this. So, yeah, so the condition that I've got is called Ehlers-Danlos condition, and it's a genetic condition that affects the way that collagen is produced in your body. So what it means is that ligaments and any connective tissue in your body is affected because the collagen isn't made right. So it's not as strong as it should be. So whilst you look perfectly normal, you're not held together in a normal way. Mm. So I always say I'm held together with elastic bands. So basically, my muscles are fighting all the time to try to keep my bones in place. So what it causes is lots of pain and muscle spasm, sometimes you get dislocations in joints as well because things are not as strong as they should be, so things pop out. Yeah. And I get with it, I get lots of neurological symptoms as well, and I get some immunological symptoms. So it's quite a spectrum of things that go along with it, and it's quite a misunderstood condition because you look normal. Doctors tend to, it's the last thing that they look for.
It's invisible, isn't it? So yeah,
completely. And I don't have this condition as bad as some people have it, so it's not immediately visible. But I I've struggled since being a child, really. So I was in hospital quite a lot as a child. When I got to kind of like my mid-teens, I was ill quite a lot, and with lots and lots of different symptoms. And then it was only really, I'd say, in my kind of late 20s, early 30s, that I ended up seeing a neurologist. Some things started to slot into place at that point, because one of my main symptoms then was lots of neck and head pain. And it was only when I found the most wonderful physio the world's ever seen, and she's been treating me now for years and years and years, and she said to me, you've got Ehlers-Danlos. And I went, what the bloody hell's Ehlers-Danlos? Yeah. And she explained it to me. I get packed off to see a rheumatologist. Yeah, that's definitely what you've got. And then things started to kind of fit into place. So all this mystery of all these things that were happening to me all then started to make sense. So I now talk about team around my client. I have a team around me. So I have a chiropractor, I have a physiotherapist, a rheumatologist, a neurologist. Occasionally I see an immunologist and a podiatrist. So I have like a team of people that I see that kind of keep me in a place where I am, you know, I function and I'm in the best kind of like health that I can be. And it's only kind of like over the years that I've kind of learned how to be the best I can be with the limitations that I have. And it's things like basic stuff, and this applies to everybody, not just people with, you know, with conditions, things like having a routine.
Yeah.
Like, what time do you get up in the morning? What time do you go to bed? Exercising regularly, because even though I have pain, exercising makes that better. It makes your whole being better. So regular exercise, hydration, my God, that is neglected by most of the population. So you'll find me drinking water, you know, throughout the day, making sure you're hydrated, making sure that your nutrition is right, and making sure that as well as physically doing what you can to look after yourself, that you're also mentally looking after yourself as well. And the mental aspect of it is probably, you know, is as if not more important than the physical side of it. No, so things like making sure that you're getting proper, adequate relaxation, things like meditation. And lots of people think, oh, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit touchy-feely, all that stuff. It's a bit Reiki healer. But meditation, it doesn't, you don't have to be sat there with, you know, your legs crossed and you know, doing yoga. You know, it can be a simple thing like doing a walk for 10 minutes every day and reflecting on your thoughts even. So I'm just a massive, massive advocate of work really hard, do what makes you buzz, what makes you tick, but also look after yourself in a physical way and in a mental way. And I think because of what, you know, the condition that I've got and the challenges that I've got, that's really kind of like my motivating factor that makes me look after myself as much as possible, because I know if I don't, I know what the consequences of that are, because I've been there. But like I said, it doesn't just apply to you know, someone like me who's got a health condition. That stuff works for everybody. It works in life and it works in business. It works for everything. So I'm just a huge advocate for it.
Amazing. I love that, because, and you might not know this, maybe some of the listeners don't know this, I'm a huge advocate of this. So mind and body are two sides of the same coin. So the way we're experiencing things in the body then has an effect on our thoughts, and our thoughts has an effect on the way that we're experiencing things in the body as well. Are kind of just, you know, it's the whole nervous system and stuff. And so for me, because I see this a lot, and it happened to me as well, and this is why I'm such a massive advocate of what you've been saying, we see a lot of burnout with high achievers. They're able to tolerate high levels of stress output, and it catches up with you, you know. And so this is why, like, generally for everybody, sleep is massively important. It's like the foundation for everything. And what you said about, you know, the time you go to bed, and, you know, go to bed at the have a pattern to that as well, really important. Hydration, like, massive. Nutrition, so important, like, for the brain. It's like ridiculous that, you know, we feed ourselves with rubbish, quite frankly, a lot of the time. But nutrition is really, really important. But also the meditation part. So this is why I trained in a practice called neurosculpting. So I wasn't very good at meditation. I found it very difficult to relax. I would try and do the meditation and beat myself up. Like, I'm not doing it right. My thoughts are everywhere. I'm supposed to have a clear mind. And then I get more anxious as a result, you know. So the practice that that I have and I've trained in, neurosculpting, is a cool, like, five-step guided meditation process that helps you rewire your brain, your nervous system, and patterns for better belief, confidence, to release stress, all of those things. And it's transformational. So I'm so pleased to hear that, you know, what you've said is absolutely applicable to everybody, to refill your mojo cup. Yeah, keep going, to be able to bounce back. Because that mindful practice that you're talking about, maybe if you, like, go for a walk and you reflect on your thoughts, or being aware of your thoughts, is incredibly powerful to kind of, I call it Frankenstein. So our limbic brain that goes nuts when we're under, we feel like our life is in danger or threat, when actually it's just being activated at the level of our thoughts. The pressure of the job is so important to calm. And that mindful practice really helps us do that, and helps us access our, I call him Einstein, so our prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain we need under stress, you know, to be calm, rational, logic, creative, empathetic, compassionate, and all of that. So that's amazing. So if there is anyone out there who's really struggling, so whether that's with the relationship stuff that's going on, or perhaps a health or medical condition, what would you say to them? What advice would you give to them?
I think this is, wow, what a difficult question, really, to answer, because I think, oh my God, I'm just a lawyer. How can I answer these things? But from kind of like my life experience, and all of the circumstances that I've been in with clients, with the issues that they've had, with the issues that I have, the advice that I would give to people is, start where you are today. Start with the tools that you have at your disposal. So, you know, you might not have anything, but that doesn't mean that you can't make a change, that you can't move things forward. I think reflection and that the meditation piece, the kind of doing the work on yourself. Mm. Who are you? What do you want? Where do you want to be? And kind of answering those questions and finding the answer to those things, making a plan, mm, and doing it. And even if that plan is, today I'm in bed and I feel terrible, mm, but I'm going to get up today and I'm going to walk 5 meters to the kitchen, I'm going to make up tea, and I'm going to come back. And then tomorrow, I'm going to do that twice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could be small, tiny things. Try to do something every day that moves you forward, even if it's one step. So I try to do that. I try not to overwhelm myself with, I'm here now, but I want to be here in 10 years. Oh my word, that means that I've got to do. And then you just get completely overwhelmed by the whole thought process. What I try to do is think, let's just look at two steps ahead of me.
Yeah.
Let's forget what's going on around me. Let's forget what the next 2 weeks might look like, the next 3 weeks might look like. What does today look like? And what can I do today? And then what can you do tomorrow? It's like building blocks. And then every day you build the momentum and things start to move and things start to change. And that goes for whether or not you've got a medical condition and you're just trying to rationalize how I deal with this and what do I do? Or whether or not you're going through a separation and divorce, you feel overwhelmed by the bigger picture and what you're going to do. It's start where you are, start with what you've got, make a plan, and just move forward that little bit every single day.
Amazing. I love that. Such sensible advice. And something that I've done when I've not been in a great space as well, it's literally one step at a time and build on that. I love it. So Katie, where can people connect with you if they want to come and hang out with you, find you?
So my website at the moment is in build still. But I don't know, do you want me to give you the website address?
Oh yes, because it'll be ready probably by the time people are listening to this.
Yes. Yeah. So it's all the W's, lowrylegal.co.uk. I'm on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
So if people search Lowry Legal online, they'll find you.
Oh, completely. We will pop up. We will be there. And people can ring or email or message through one of the socials and happily have a chat with them and see where they're up to.
Amazing. Thank you so much for all of your insights and practical guidance and tips. It's been so fabulous to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Jo Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.